This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. And I'm so pleased to have a good friend, an old friend of mine. The first time we are here at a podcast, we have spoken with each other before, but Wolf, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for joining us today.
And thank you for having me, Armon. What a pleasure after probably 20 years to see you again and having a conversation with you.
Fantastic. Would you mind, telling us about yourself, about the company? And of course, we are getting into also the book that you recently wrote, of course.
Thank you, Armon. Yes. So my name is Wolf Ruzicka. I sit on more than 10 boards at this point. But the main day job for me is chairman of Eastbank Technologies, and think of me as the chief AI evangelist of the company. So I happen to stand on stages preaching about this mysterious technology that really is not mysterious, and trying to make people understand that this is very approachable technology and very powerful technology that can be applied in most organizations. So that's my day job, and this is me.
Fantastic. And you spent some time writing a book about AI, and definitely when I saw that, I asked you if you could please join us for this interview, and you kindly accepted. Tell us a little bit about that book, about the AI book that you have written.
Of course. So it all happened because almost a quarter of a century ago, my team built the first fuzzy logic engine. So a quarter of a century ago, my company was already involved in probabilistic engineering. And so about 3 years ago, I received a call during lockdown. I was stuck at my kitchen table, and the publisher said, well, so we saw your case studies. We read your blogs. You know, Armon, eight years ago, it was Chinese TV that interviewed me when DeepMind beat the reigning Go grandmaster 8 years ago. And of course, I received that same question. Will this destroy humanity? Will it replace jobs? Will it kill jobs? And so, you know, my muscle memory in this space has just become so firm that 3 years ago, this publisher called me and said, would you like to write a book about AI for enterprise CXOs? And when the call came in, I was in Dallas, Texas at the time, and I just happened to stand in front of the headquarters of American Airlines. It's not a customer of mine. And as I was talking, I decided for myself, I'm going to write the book for that CEO with the, and I don't even know, is it a man or a woman? I have never met him or her. But that's when I decided that is going to be my target audience, with the goal that he or she can go to Dallas Airport, fly to Houston, a short flight, and maybe run through the airport past Hudson News, see the book, grab it, flip through it, and land in Houston saying, I understand the framework now. I get it now. And then hopefully gets excited enough to actually read it and or hand it to the CIO and CTO and say, this is what I want. And it doesn't have to necessarily be, you know, working with Eastbank Technologies or me. The amount of work and possibilities is just so vast that I wanted to package this experience of a quarter of a century and pass it out for others to take advantage of.
Fantastic. No, I mean, you did the right thing, knowing the audience first and then starting to, you know, write a book for that audience. I mean, that's pretty smart. Now, when you write a book about AI, it's something that the topic is not simple, but the output needs to be extremely simple, right? So that's what you did. When I read your book, and I have a kind of Kindle version of it, so I don't have the physical version to show the audience here, but yeah, that's
fantastic.
Of course,
I come prepared.
Fantastic. So, so when I, you know, have this kind of book and reading it, I enjoy it because it's kind of simply put the topics that are not simple. And that's fantastic. That's great. For example, when you are starting talking about AI first mentality, right? And then you use, I don't want to, you know, spoil it. I wanted to, for you to explain it, but that was simply put the way that you said, this is what you mean by AI first mentality. And you use the example of, for example, mobile first, right? So I would like for you to expand upon it a little bit yourself.
Yeah, so if you remember when smartphones first came out, and we know exactly which smartphone I'm talking about that revolutionized everything, people were trying to squeeze legacy apps into this new form factor, trying to get, you know, traditional web apps or websites or web portals to behave in the mobile world. And, you know, that first customer that we examine in the first chapter that I cannot name, we decided not to name any of the customers, not because we're not allowed to talk about them. You'll find them on our website, but we wanted to make it approachable across industries and across segments of industries and subsectors. And so, for that first customer, our first engagement was to completely turn the internet experience upside down and turn it into a mobile first organization with web application and websites second. It's always easier to scale something up than it is to scale something down. The same concept applies in AI. If you now retroactively try to push AI into an existing enterprise system architecture or software architecture, you will have a hard time. You'll spend too much money and too much time. I have so many examples now where people have tried to dabble with these very approachable, very publicly available technologies. If they come from Microsoft, if they come from AWS, if they come from Google or others, or even independent, say LLMs that you can pick, open source, you can put them into your own environment. But if you retroactively try to put these technologies into an existing stack, they get stuck. That's exactly what happened to the, you know, in the mobile world. And it's exactly what's happening right now in the AI world, where I encounter heads of AI and heads of data that have not been able to move substantially any of those probabilistic technologies into a production environment where users enjoy working with it. And so AI first, the AI first mentality doesn't mean that you now have to throw all of these legacy systems away and then start fresh. That also isn't what we did when you and I first started building mobile first, you know, applications or business intelligence systems. But what you have to find is the lowest, the shortest path from data to a production deployment of probabilistic technologies. And that's the AI first thinking that you have to embrace as you entertain new products, new services, new ways of engaging your customers. And then over time, this thinking will strangle. It's an old software development, you know, not a methodology, but it's a software approach, is to strangle the old with these new components so that the, you know, the legacy slowly fades away without it ever being just, you know, a lift and shift type of approach, but a fluid evolution from from the current state to an AI first state.
And, you know, just using that as an example, because you said mobile, for example, when we think about mobile and many applications that became actually mobile first, but not every single application, every vertical or use case was a perfect match.
Correct.
To become a mobile first, right? So in our world, there was a good example. I do not remember the name of the company, but they did a fantastic job, become the mobile first analytic tool. And they said, you know what? Our product only works on mobile and nothing else because we want it to be perfect on mobile. And the market in that case reacted differently. The market reacted more like the number of pixels are limited for this particular use case maybe, or maybe they needed the combination or hybrid. But in some other cases, mobile first played beautifully. I mean, think of Uber, for example, could not exist without that kind of mentality, right? So, Correct. So how? What's your take when it comes to AI? When do you think AI will be very successful, dominant for use cases? What kind of use cases has to be AI first design and that kind of, bring that kind of mentality to the table? And what are the other cases that might be a blend and continue to be a blend?
Yeah. So first of all, it may make sense to say how I define AI. And maybe you can tell by my accent that I'm German. I know you, Arman, remember that. So I'm German, and Germans are famously boring. And at one point, so I can say that, at one point, Germans wanted to call it, as far as I know, this what we now call AI, they wanted to call it predictions based on complex data processing. And then the American marketing genius took over and said, well, this is too self-explanatory. Let's just make it mysterious by calling it artificial intelligence. Mm. But when you think about this original definition, everything about AI are predictions. So it is predictive technologies. These are probabilistic engineering methodologies that you use. And there's three components to an AI. There is mathematics. We call them models, or sometimes in the Gen AI world, you call them LLMs, or there's all kinds of different words to describe it. It's mathematics, the language of the universe. And then you combine it with compute power. Compute power is what the hyperscalers provide us from any of the cloud providers, or maybe even sometimes our own data centers. There's no criticism in having your own data center. There's no dogma in any of this. And the food that we give these two components is the third element, which is data. So data plus compute plus mathematics is AI, probabilistic engineering. So does it apply everywhere? No, of course not. When you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. But this is just one of the tools in your toolbox, and it only applies to where probabilistic, or let's say predictions, are important to you. And sometimes we don't even realize that there is, probabilistic things happening as we engage with an AI. One of the geniuses of ChatGPT is to put a chat interface on top of a generative AI. But now we all think that a Gen AI is a chat interface. It's not. It just happens to be the interface that everyone suddenly thinks is an AI. But behind the scenes, this thing is predicting, words based on your question to maybe answer your question correctly. So it is predicting something. So the first criteria for a use case is a prediction necessary for me to solve this particular problem or not? If the answer is yes, then you might need some kind of AI. And an AI is not an AI or another AI. There's really just three branches of AI if I think about it. So the first one is an AI on top of structured data. Think in columns and rows and very structured data. And you can put like you and I have done for decades. You can put mathematical models on top of structured data and extrapolate what might happen 3 minutes from now, 5 hours from now, next year, next quarter, you name it. It's a very traditional way of applying a probabilistic technology on top of, data, structured data. The second branch is unstructured data. Unstructured data is chaos. And I did listen to some of your interviews on SAS Scaled. So I know you already covered this in some instances because I'm German. I did my homework. Unstructured data is chaos. You cannot throw unstructured data on a probabilistic a probabilistic engine because it is looking for patterns. Only if it sees patterns can it make predictions. Unstructured data, by definition, has no structure. Therefore, there are no patterns. Therefore, it is useless for an AI unless you go through the effort of defining structure inside of this unstructured data. Common themes, in legal documents, there is a repetitive pattern in how court cases are being, written up, decided, and so on. And so that then becomes predictable, and you can identify the variables inside of unstructured data that apply across the entire field of unstructured data. So now we have the second branch of AI, which means that if you are an enterprise that is like any other enterprise, about 80% of your data is this unstructured data. In some cases, you don't need to predict something from it. When the next batch of unstructured data comes in, do you need to process it and make predictions off your training data? Yes or no? Maybe. I don't know. But this is the question to ask here. And then the third branch is what we now call generative AI, where you have it create something for you. It predicts what type of image you might want to see. It predicts what kind of movie clip. Now I'm thinking about, say, a Midjourney or a Sora, what kind of movie clip you might want to see and enjoy. And so it also has applications. And like we said in the book, the biggest beneficiaries of Gen AI, in my opinion, if you look at the tremendous user base that ChatGPT has or OpenAI has accomplished in an incredibly, short period of time, but you look at the daily active users of this chatbot that happens to sit on top of a Gen AI, it is extremely low. And the reason is that for now, this is just an entertainment tool. You can ask it to, tell me a joke in German that, talks about, I don't know, Bavarians, where I come from, things like that. So that's the usage that we see for the most part. But in an enterprise setting, the biggest beneficiary that we've seen, which we cover in chapter 5, is anybody who has a defined process. So let's say you have a CRM system. Let's say you have an ERP system or anything like that, an electronic medical record system where processes are broken into tasks, are put together into a process and are documented. If you then attach a generative AI to that type of an environment, you can automate and reduce the time that it takes for these tasks that make up a process to be completed. So the example we cited is a process in a very large organization that typically took 18 months to complete. Putting Gen AI correctly onto a process like that brought it down to 1 week from start to finish. So there's various use cases in everything that I just talked about, and there's plenty of use cases that I did not talk about where all the CEO or the CMO or the COO is asking for is traditional deterministic software engineering, and that will stay with us for all time to come. This probabilistic engineering will not replace deterministic engineering. It complements deterministic engineering. And so there's use cases for both of them. And in each one of them, there's so many branches that you have to think through before you say, that hammer, I'm going to use it to hammer in this screw. Use it to hammer in the nail.
Since you have released your book, published it, I think it should be about 2 months, if I'm correct, right? Maybe time flies. Maybe it's longer. Maybe shorter.
No, it's actually just 4 weeks or so at this point. Four or five weeks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 5 weeks. So I was 3 weeks off. So, and since you have released your book, you have been in a variety of places. You know, you have been invited to talk about AI, or maybe even before you released the book, you have been invited to talk about AI. Yes. So, we talked about a number of these places that, you know, you have spoken for and you are going to go there and just speak for them. But the ones that you already have experienced, I wonder what kind of, you know, highlight you have. What is the single thing that essentially was very interesting or surprising, or it was very unexpected in a good way for you to really go to these kind of, you know, different groups? And when you talk about AI, you experience, you see amongst those executives, amongst those people that, you know, you bring up this topic and discuss it. And if you could share that experience with us. And also, is that the kind of, you know, experience that you ever expected to see a year ago, for example, when, you know, when you were thinking about AI and writing about it?
So my expectation was really that I've been asked the same set of questions and giving the same set of answers, solving the same set of problems repetitively so often that I decided to automate it by writing a book so that I can go to people and say, please read it. This is not meant disrespectfully. Read it and you will understand. And then let's take the conversation after your understanding has firmed up about these technologies. And so my expectation was literally just that I would be able to shorten my life spent on repetition. But really the most amazing thing happened within the first week. AI-driven was number two in the AI category on Amazon. It was number one in the cloud computing category on Amazon, because cloud computing, as I said, compute is an important factor. And it looks like we even got this across well. And so then I never expected to make money from the book. And I'm sure I will not make money from this book. No, there's not enough people to read it. There's only very few CXOs in the world on an enterprise level. But the most surprising thing that happened to me is that I got invited to speak about AI. So I was a keynote speaker. I was slated for 15 minutes in one of those AI summits that Microsoft hosted. And an hour later, I was still answering questions because the curiosity. So this leads to the most surprising thing, the curiosity and the confusion of even technologists and even technical executives is so vast that, you know, giving them an opening to be able in a safe space to ask the dumb questions that are not dumb, because I understand that this can be very confusing. And so, you know, the curiosity about the power of these technologies, the energy that people invest into really wanting to understand what this can do was the most surprising part. And then, of course, the biggest joy is when I can pop some of those misconceptions that are out there. I remember I was asked in one of the events, and maybe I'm wrong, you know, predictions are really hard, especially if they involve the future, as Niels Bohr so famously said. So when I got asked, Wolf, what do you think? Will this kill, will this destroy planet Earth? And I immediately had to bring them back to the three components of AI: training data that you use to train your mathematics plus compute. And the last time I checked, We didn't have training data on destroyed planet Earth. We haven't destroyed it often enough to train an AI to then be able to destroy planet Earth. And I think not just the laughter, but also having this sink in, bringing it back to basic principles of, you know, of software engineering, I think is the biggest joy that I can, you know, I can remember in the past 5 weeks.
Fantastic. Now, changing gears a little bit, you mentioned you are on multiple boards, and some of those are the companies that you invested, you started, you helped them, you know, on the from the get-go. Now, some people listening to this conversation, you know, would like to learn from someone like you that you have been involved in getting things started. Mm-hmm. You have seen companies at different sizes getting started, different types of company getting started. What is the kind of pattern that you see from founders that are really focusing on kind of thinking not super big, but very pragmatic, and then they want to really make this achievable within a short period of time, maybe 2 years, 3 years, right? So I know that I can finish it and then get it to that point. And then from that point, if there is another next step, go forward. And versus there are some, you know, encouragement that in the market, and they encourage founders, people to really come and think big, but it may not be accomplished even in 20 years, that kind of big vision. Mm-hmm. What would be your advice to most people thinking big or thinking more pragmatic and more kind of, this is really what I wanted to do? What's your take on it? And there are good examples on both sides that have worked well, but, you know, practically speaking, when it comes to your experience, how do you see it?
Well, I would tell people that are wondering about this to call you, because you are the prime example of the pragmatic entrepreneur, founder, and you know, and serial exiter. So I will tell the audience about Armand today. When Armand and I first met, I come from the same background as Armand, from business intelligence. I was one of the pilgrimage that went to Walmart when their central data warehouse breached the unimaginable size of 100 terabytes at the time. And we went through the data center and said, oh my God, this is what 100 terabytes looks like. And our last project at East Bank Tech involved probably 50 petabytes of data or something like this, you know? So it's quite amazing to have gone on this journey together. You have done the same thing. And so it is very easy to make things much more complex than they actually need to be. So when Armand and I first interacted, it was when you had just started Logi XML and you were about to receive your first sizable capital investment.
You're right. I almost forgot about it. You're right.
I even know the number, and I don't know if I can mention the last name of Carter here who brought us together. But so that's when I realized what you had done at Logi. I come from the very complicated world of MicroStrategy, very sophisticated, very all encompassing. And I think it is one of those rare examples where a huge vision, at least for a certain period of time, succeeded until it didn't. And you had started in the same industry with something based on a very basic and simple, and this is not meant patronizing or arrogant. You started with something very simple, complexity made simple, the ability to analyze large data sets with very approachable, simple technologies. You had three products at the time, and each one for one particular use case. And it was just fascinating how many customers you had been able to rein in with a very small sales team, because you essentially made it a self-service type of offering where people didn't even have to talk to a salesperson before they could enjoy working with Logi. They didn't have to prepare for years and years and years the data before they could work with Logi. And I think that was the key to your success. And that now, if I extrapolate that, it's true for everyone's success, unless you think that you have a world-changing idea and you will be a unicorn. Well, guess what? The statistical probability of that is zero. So either you are a genius or, you must be one of the luckiest people in the world, but you cannot place your future on a statistical probability of zero. I would much rather bet my future in technology on something that can be rolled out to users in a very short period of time and then iterate with the users. And that's what you did. And that's what every one of the successful companies that I am honored to be on the board of, is doing. I've never been part of a unicorn, or at least I've been part of a unicorn for a very short time until there was no unicorn anymore. And so, the higher you rise, the less oxygen there is. And so breathing sometimes becomes very difficult. I'd much rather stay where the oxygen is rich, meaning the path to success and the path to survival has a much higher likelihood. And that boils down to three things. It's the founder, the Armands of this world. It's the product.
They're kind of you.
Yes, the product of that world, the product, the Logi XML of this world, and the market. Is it a market that is sizable enough to sustain such a success, big enough for the investors to get a good reward? I'm sure you didn't set out to turn it into a unicorn, and the VC at the time didn't make a unicorn return. But guess what? You were a safe bet for them, and they will always reinvest into you.
Yeah, no, they kind of, you actually, on my side, I should say most of the credit goes to the team I was lucky to work with. And when I go back and look at, every project, every event, every company that I was involved in, and it was a success, it goes back to, the team that you could build around that project, and the team drove it and really made it successful. I just take the credit not to mess it up, not to go there and just, provide them too much of my ideas, let them do their work. That was the most important thing I did. And the rest was actually them. Just doing
yes,
that, right?
Of course. And I think yet again, you just showed why you were the successful and are the successful leader that, people like me invest into.
Very kind of you. And then now the AI-driven, the book, normally at the end of, each episode in this SaaS Scaled, I have asked people that that come and join me on this show to tell us about a book that they like. In this case, your book is the book, the AI-driven book. You want to, just talk a little bit more about it. And the last question will be about AI-driven as well. So I would like to ask you, about this AI-driven book that you have. How do you describe this book to someone who doesn't know anything about this book? You already told us about the audience that you wanted this book to be for, but what else, how you can summarize in a minute or two, this is really the book is about?
Well, I'm going to turn this question on its head a little bit. So there were four books that inspired my structural thinking about AI-driven. And I hope I get them right. So the first one, if you look at the title page or the cover page of AI-driven, the image is a black swan. And so this is book number one. It's Black Swan. It doesn't need any introduction. A black swan, if you remember, the fable is that explorers went from continent to continent to continent, and all they found were white swans, be it South America, Africa, Asia, Europe, North America. So they concluded all swans are white, until they came to Australia, where all the swans are black. That's a black swan event. It's an improbable event. You just cannot predict it based on historical data. So, black swan. The second book is what we at East Bank Tech do, is Digital Transformation by Tom Siebel. You probably know him. He is now also in AI, but it's the subheader of his book that really triggered me to read it and hopefully understand it. It is How to Survive in an Era of Mass Extinction. So a black swan event like a meteor that hits planet Earth and destroys all the dinosaurs. The dinosaurs in that time of digital transformation were the ones that had not yet turned into software product companies that happened to do X. So let's pick, give me one of your favorite customers that you would like to mention as a brand on this podcast. What is one customer you really like to work with? Armand.
Any customer, you mean?
Yes, any customer that is a legacy business that you're proud of.
Oh, that I personally like to work with their product, for example.
Mm-hmm. No, with Curvy.
With Curvy. So, if I understand your question, I mean, we are analytic tools. So we add analytics to any application, any SaaS application. CRMs are one of the areas, the products that, you know, we have several CRMs, for example. Mm-hmm. And those CRMs are adding analytic, adding, you know, self-service capabilities, adding other capabilities within. So I would say any CRM application, I mean, some of those are OEM kind of engagement as we do. So we might be unnamed and behind the, you know, under the hood.
Of course.
Maybe, you know, because it's their brand, not our brand. We are white labeled. Right. But think of any CRM application. It can be a perfect match. And we already have, you know, probably tens of CRM systems using us.
So the reason why I wanted you to name somebody is that think of that dinosaur going back to the second book, Digital Transformation. You survive the meteor strike. The dinosaurs have gone, but there are some dinosaurs from the CRM world that have moved into will move into the AI world. They will be AI companies that happen to provide customer relationship management software. So that is digital transformation in the AI world. So first book, Black Swan, second book, Digital Transformation, the way I defined it. The third book was written by one of my friends, former MicroStrategy, called Digital Darwinism. So you combine a Black Swan event, a digital Black Swan event, with the capability of transforming yourself digitally, you have digital Darwinism, meaning if you don't get on that journey, you will be the dinosaur. That doesn't mean that all dinosaurs die. Some dinosaurs, actually, crocodiles, turtles, birds, famously are dinosaurs, they have survived. The mammals have taken advantage of the digital Darwinism because they were adaptable and crawled, you know, jumped from the trees, crawled from out of their caves and said, no more dinosaurs. Let me run into the green savannas and become an elephant and you name it. So that's what Digital Darwinism, that book, meant to me as far as structuring my own book, AI driven. And when you do these three things, or you embody these three things, you really take them seriously and you adopt an AI first methodology and mentality, then you will be book number four, Anti-Fragile, by the same author. And it's a better book than Black Swan.
Oh, wow. Amazing. Great. Fantastic. Thank you very much for sharing these four books with us and putting also a context around AI-driven, the book that you created out of, you know, the inspiration that you got out of these four books. So, fantastic. Thanks, Wolf, again, for always a pleasure speaking with you. This beautiful office, I met you probably there, I don't know, my timing is always wrong, but 5-10 years ago, maybe I was there at
most likely
beautiful office in Georgetown. And I hope to see you again soon in person. Take care.
We will, Armand. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armand Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to sasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.